Everyone's asleep. Everyone but me. And I can't help feel like I'm doing this all by myself.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to an impromptu, energized, over-caffeinated edition of the Vinnie Eastwood Show. We're broadcasting live from the fabulously fluoridated capital of Auckland, New Zealand, the island chained procrastination in the sunny slave South Pacific. It's not only fluoridated, it's also Fukushima irradiated, which according to the Prime Minister is good for the economy because now everybody can get a part-time job as an incandescent light bulb. And my very special guest is Paul Carruthers. Paul, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Vinny. How are you doing?
I'm good. And for those of you who don't know, Paul has been a great supporter and an exposer of scumbaggery on behalf of Alan Hubbard, who is touted in the media as quote-unquote disgraced financier, Alan Hubbard, when in actual fact he was the victim of a conspiracy by the government, a serious fraud office, which incidentally run most of the serious frauds in this country, in order to steal his wealth and indeed, in my considered opinion, implode the Southland economy by ridding it of one of its only, business-minded and morally dictated financiers, which actually has done a massive blow, I reckon, to the Southland economy in general. So it's very important that you explain to people the truth about these matters and what actually happens, and because otherwise, the mainstream media will never let the truth get out because they're trying to protect the very establishment which committed the scumbaggery in the first place. Paul, welcome.
Thanks, Vinny. Mate, to make life really simple for people so they can get to form an understanding of why I've pushed this barrier so hard and why I think it's so important and why I think people should pay attention and take notice of what's been going on here. First and foremost, for me personally, the issue was the fact that he was 83 years old and his wife was a very similar age, that he, Alan was receiving dialysis treatment because he'd had cancer of the kidney. In fact, for the 2 years from 2008 to late 2009, the period where they're blaming him for the, the rhetoric the government have used against him on South Canterbury Finance is to the effect that he allowed the company to go out and have a big splurge on lending inappropriately on, say, over-leveraged properties or whatever, using taxpayer-funded money under the Crown Guarantee. So, in other words, when the Crown applied the guarantee to South Canterbury Finance, they just went and loaned all that money out inappropriately. But nobody ever made any mention of the fact that Alan was actually in hospital for most of that 2 years that period occurred, that his other directors were running it. These are the guys who are on the fraud charges, up on the fraud charges have been shifted sideways onto him shortly after his death. Now, no attention was ever paid to this man's physical condition, to his health, and yet, if you put it in context, what the public of New Zealand really should be thinking about here is that here you have Jock Hobbs, who died last year shortly after the Rugby World Cup. Now,
For those in the international audience, Jock Hobbs, a very famous New Zealand All Black rugby player. Sorry, go ahead, Paul.
Well, Jock Hobbs was 53 and had been diagnosed with leukemia, and the government openly stated that they were not going to investigate him with his involvement in the finance company collapse that he was a director of, because of the fact that he had leukemia and, they just felt sorry for him. So what I don't understand and what I think the public shouldn't understand either is how does that compare to Alan Hubbard's situation when the guy's 30 years older, he's had cancer as well and still in the process of recovering from it, and that resulted in the removal of one of his kidneys and ended up with him on dialysis. So How can those factors not be taken into account in his case? So this is where people should be suspicious, because there was this great big hoo-ha about this man. You know, they gave you a choice of anything between Ponzi scheme and senility as the explanation for why they needed to do this. You know, it's like what they actually did was they pushed this man off the side of they pushed this man off the side of the good ship South Canterbury Finance to create the impression that everyone needed rescuing him from him. Do you know what I mean? His investors and taxpayers, everybody needed to be rescued from this hideous old man. I mean, mate, no disrespect intended, but if Alan had been caught with his finger up a 12-year-old girl, I could understand why there was such an absolute hoo-ha about him. But the kind of rhetoric that was the kind of just onslaught that alone should have made everybody suspicious. Why was there just such a massive, massive media trial around this issue? You'd have to consider the possibility that the government needed it to be that big. They needed it to look that way in order to keep everybody's attention diverted for what they were doing behind the scenes, right? Now, whatever way you look at it, understand this, New Zealanders. A citizen of New Zealand, this is what happened to Alan Hubbard. A citizen of New Zealand and his wife, right, were put through a 15-month media trial where they were called everything from senile to fraudulent to running a Ponzi scheme, whatever, right? They had Facebook pages started up against them, you know, before the man was even charged for the crime, they had a Facebook page saying, put Alan Hubbard away. Now, the guy was 83 years old.
Mm.
And he was sick.
And the alternative left media kept calling him, like, Mr. Magoo.
Oh, you had people like Martin Bradbury and that waited till after he died and came out and sort of called him Mr. Magoo and called him a fraud. I mean, Martin Bradbury must feel like an absolute idiot now, and he is an absolute idiot. In the headlines 2 weeks ago, they're saying the money was there all along. So what does that say about Martin Bradbury's research? What does that say about the Ponzi scheme that Martin Bradbury alleges that Alan Hubbard was running? Well, it wasn't a Ponzi scheme. The money was there all along, Martin. You never even... And this is addressing... I'm actually addressing Martin Bradbury direct now. Martin, you're a dick. You never even rang Alan Hubbard up. And yet you wrote an article after he died calling him Mr. Magoo and saying it was a Ponzi scheme. You haven't got a clue what you're talking about. You're just an idiot, all right? I don't know why anybody listens to you. But that aside, what happened here, New Zealanders, is... This guy, Alan Hubbard, and his wife had their assets frozen and stripped and sold out from under them by the Crown on the basis of accusations alone, right? Now,
Can I make an interjection just here? They're getting all their assets and everything stripped off them, and they're being accused of being big money hoarders, fraudsters, and so on and so forth. Well, what is the value of their home? And what kind of car did they drive? Because when I look at fraudsters, I have to look at their home and what they drive.
Alan drove a 1960s VW Beetle. He lived in a very modest home with worn carpet and old furniture. He slept in a tubular frame single steel bed. He had one chair beside it, which he used to do his reading at night time while he was sitting on his dialysis machine. This guy lived like an absolute monk. Right, him and Jean took $750 a month drawings out of the company, and they paid themselves with that. They paid their own bills with that, and they lived a very frugal lifestyle. And everything else went back to their investors, or went to charity, or to help the community somehow. So, this man was extremely philanthropic, and his philanthropy was used against him. Right, but going back over it, New Zealanders, listen. Listen, this man was accused of fraud before the investigation was even started. There's a whole lot of stuff here that you should seriously be jumping up and down about and questioning, because $1.5 billion of your money, right, has been ripped out from underneath you by John Key and his mate Bill English and their advisors, right, and all of the people they appointed to this trough. All the pigs whose nose are in the trough that John Key appointed them to here, all these people have been making money out of your taxpayer money while Alan Hubbard's been getting the blame for it. Well, understand this, right? Alan Hubbard and his wife were accused of fraud before an investigation into fraud was even started. Now, that should have been the first warning sign to absolutely everybody, right? That how do you have a situation, how can the government announce the outcome of their investigation before they've even started it? That should have been the first warning clue. On top of that, the year before, you had the head of the company's office who drove all of these actions against Alan Hubbard. You had him out in the public forum saying, oh, well, I know we haven't done anything about all the previous finance company collapses, but we're going to get someone sooner or later. There's someone running a Ponzi scheme out there, so we're going to get them, don't you worry. Well, a year later, almost to the day, there's Alan Hubbard being set up and called a fraud before any investigation even starts, and they're calling it the first headline on the first day, they're calling it a Ponzi scheme. I mean, do the math, New Zealanders, right? That should have told you straight away that there was a risk that the guy was being set up here, right? Now, they put him into statutory management, right, and told the public that they were doing this to protect the investors and to protect the taxpayers and all the rest of it, right? Now, this decision to put him in statutory management was made by a committee or a board of people, none of it was ever put before a judge. The final decision was made by Minister Simon Power on the recommendation of a guy called Simon Botherway. Now, Simon Botherway was at the time on the executive of the Securities Commission. His brother, a year before, had been bankrupted by South Canterbury Finance, right, Alan's finance company, because his string of bars, he had 8 or 9 bars that he was running, were put into receivership, owing South Canterbury Finance, I think it was about $8 million. So eventually South Canterbury Finance put him in receivership and ended up having to bankrupt him because they never got the money back. Now, a year later, he sits on the committee that makes the decision to put Alan Hubbard into statutory management, and I actually went to the Ombudsman over that and did a complaint, said that's a conflict of interest, and they ruled that it wasn't. How can that not be a conflict of interest? Right? Here you've got a situation where this guy's saying that he was acting on an anonymous complaint. This guy, by the way, is saying he was acting on an anonymous complaint when he called this committee meeting to determine whether or not they should recommend to Simon Power that Alan Hubbard should be put into statutory management. He failed to declare to the Securities Commission, to Simon Power, or to anyone in that committee that his brother had been bankrupted by Alan Hubbard's company a year before for $8 million. Failed to declare it. And it was only until 4 days after the announcement, after Simon Power announced that he was taking that recommendation and putting Alan into statutory management, 4 days after Simon, by the way, announces, what happened was a reporter discovered this link between his brother and South Canterbury Finance, contacted him with it, confronted him with it, and within an hour, the Security Commission was issuing a public statement trying to downplay the whole thing and saying that, yes, they acknowledged that he hadn't notified the committee and that he hadn't notified Simon Power, but that there was no need to because there wasn't a conflict of interest. I mean, this. What I'm saying is that was the beginning of a dramatic failure on the government's part to even attempt to uphold Alan Hubbard's rights, okay? The guy had rights. New Zealand, understand this. I'm coming at this and always have been coming at this from the point of view that this man was a human being. First and foremost, he might have been a finance company director, but him and his wife were human beings who, on the balance of evidence, after 60 years' contribution to this company, country, should have been given the benefit of the doubt. Absolutely should have been given the benefit of the doubt. When you look at his contribution to their contribution to charity, to all the other things that they did for this country, I still to this day cannot comprehend, even if the government felt that it had to really, you know, step in to do something to protect South Canterbury Finance or whatever. To this day, the enormously loud and clashy and bangy sort of verbal kind of, you know, vitriolic way in which it was done should make everybody be questioning why that was necessary. Because one of the fastest ways to destroy a company and to destroy the value of its assets is to create this kind of hoo-ha about it, right? So that alerted my suspicion straight away. I was thinking, if they're trying to save this company and they're interested in the value and preserving the value of the assets for the investors, why are they making such a huge song and dance and issuing accusations that they aren't even able to prove yet? Why are they announcing that fraud has occurred before they've even started an investigation?
You know, it's because they're fraud. It's probably because they're frauds themselves, and that's what they do.
The only logical explanation for the way they did this was that they were deliberately attempting to drive the value of the assets down.
Well, hold on a second here, because Simon Power was the Justice Minister at the time, wasn't he? And the Westpac Bank does the majority of the banking for the New Zealand government, and weren't they one of the prime receivers of a lot of the assets which were down in value,
so they've got a penny
on the dollars? And on top of that, after this all happens, after Westpac Bank, through no small part of Simon Power, gets a heck of a lot of money for pennies on the dollar, then Simon Power leaves Parliament and becomes the CEO of Westpac.
Mate, it gets worse than that. He became the head of private banking, so that was a cushy job that he got. In my opinion, that was to keep him silent and buy him off. I mean, if you want my honest opinion, I think Simon Power left office because he knew that the ghost of Alan Hubbard was going to haunt him if he tried to stay in power. Because I think he knew that sooner or later the lid was going to come off this tin of worms that John Key and his mates have created, and it's going to portray them, it's going to make Kim.com look like a walk in the park. Right, what they did to Alan Hubbard, and what's happened to those assets since. Now, understand that Simon Power acted on this recommendation without even, of Simon Botherway's committee, without even obtaining a court order, didn't even put it before a judge. So New Zealanders, all the actions that happened against Alan Hubbard and the collapse and the failure of South Canterbury Finance occurred without one court order and one warrant in place, right? All of this was done on the basis of advisers, right? And now, remember, they put him in statutory management to start with only in relation to his private companies, Aorangi and HMF, right? And they said that it was a Ponzi scheme. Now, at the time, I went to the Ombudsman and said there's a conflict of interest here because the guy that made this recommendation was bankrupted by Alan's company, so he shouldn't have been involved in it for a start. And secondly, there's no court order here. I mean, I sent a private email to Simon Power and said to him, mate, you're committing political suicide with this. You're absolutely committing political suicide, at least in the South Island, because people aren't going to forgive you for it. Procedurally, what you're doing here is fundamentally wrong, right? You're not even giving this guy the benefit of the doubt. It was just wrong, and I'll explain how and why after the break.
Yeah, indeed. And also the reason why we're getting Paul on, and even at such short notice, and thank you for getting my text message and coming on, is because of recent attacks upon Alan Hubbard's wife that are completely unfounded, unjustified, and absolutely disgusting. And we'll explain the details of that after the break at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com.
We got to change the way we see the problem if we're gonna fix this place. My living soul don't care about the color of your face. Unite and go respect our right to live here on the land. It's Tino Ranga, Tino Tonga, we don't own the banks. The parliament does so where'd you rather stand? They paying their bills off your back with hefty tax demands.
Misleading our youth
with alcohol, TV contrabands. So kids...
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the show that's all about TV, alcohol, and contrabands. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on AmericanFreedomRadio.com 5 days a week, 2 hours a day. We have FCC regulations, so we can't swear, but we can talk about anything else because there's no taboo topics on this network, and I'm very grateful. I must say, so very grateful that I was given this show many years ago, because there's so many activists and good people in this country who don't get, you know, hours to speak their piece that they actually need, because information is not compressed into audio nibbles. You need saturation. You need lots of information in order to make a conclusion about anything. And the mainstream media is just adept at making sure that the sheer quantity of information that exists doesn't get into anybody's ears or eyeball frame of vision. And it's not cool. That's why, incidentally, I've got more subscribers than the New Zealand Herald, more subscribers than New Zealand 3 News, more subscribers than TVNZ, more subscribers than News Talk ZB, more subscribers than Radio Live New Zealand. I've got more subscribers than practically all of them combined. You know why? Because they suck balls. They're useless. They're pathetic. They don't have any clue. They're morons. And on top of that, not only are they freaking stupid and freaking inept, they're also scum. Bad people. Not very nice at all. Don't do the right thing. Don't know their a-hole from their elbow, yo. And my very special guest, Paul Carruthers. Welcome back. We want to talk about Alan Hubbard's wife and recent attacks that she's come under.
Thank you for cutting into my talking time with your rampant self-promotion, Vinny.
My bad.
That's good, mate. I don't disagree with you either. Yeah, I mean, a lot of people would have seen Gene Hubbard getting put through the ringer a couple of weeks ago in that court case, and we'll get back onto that. But what I want to do is just go back right back to the beginning and say, look, New Zealand, understand this, where this is really coming from here, and why you should be concerned about this and why you should be asking questions, right? Alan Hubbard and his wife were placed into statutory management, right, on the basis of recommendations made to the Minister Simon Power by very questionable means, for a start, right? The recommendations that were made to Simon Power to put Alan Hubbard into statutory management were based on a 19-page report. Now, understand this. A 19-page report that was submitted to Simon Power, right, based on a two-hour visit, a random visit at Alan Hubbard's office by one person from the company's office and another person who actually ended up being appointed statutory manager. So 2 weeks before Alan was put into statutory management, somebody appeared at his office one day, two guys appeared at his office, one of whom introduced himself as from the company's office, a guy called John McPherson. And he brought the other guy in and just didn't actually tell Alan who he was, right? And said that we're here to do a random inspection of your accounts. Now, Alan said, well, I've got 8 cabinets full of them. I've got 600, you know, or so investor files. And they said, and Alan said, I can even have them brought down on a truck if you want from the main office. And they said, oh, no, we'll just do a cursory inspection. Give us a handful from the A section. So he literally did. He got them about half a dozen files from the A section of all of his investor files. And they sat there and they did a two-hour, right, audit of these 6 files, right? And they went away and they wrote a 19-page report on that accusing him of fraud. Right now, this is based on less than 1% inspection of his total investor files of 600 or so files. They looked at a handful of about 6 of them. They went away and they wrote a 19-page report recommending to the Minister Power or to the Securities Commission that he was guilty of fraud and should be put into statutory management. Now, that he should have been investigated for fraud and put into statutory management. Right now, this was done by the staff of the company's office, and they never told Alan Hubbard who the other person was. Well, the other person turned out 2 weeks later, or several weeks later, the other person walked through Alan Hubbard's door after having been appointed statutory manager. So this guy was not introduced to Alan Hubbard. They never told him who he was. He was allowed to come into Alan's office and basically write a report for the government, accusing Alan of fraud, and suggesting that he should be put into statutory management, and then he got appointed statutory manager. And he's made nearly $5 million in fees out of it ever since. And all of this was done without a court order or a warrant. So that's the first point that New Zealanders should be challenging this whole process, right? Because this could happen to anybody. That's the point. If the government is prepared to ignore procedure to this degree, basically what they did was they set this guy up. I mean, here was the head of the company's office a year before saying, we're going to get somebody, there's a Ponzi scheme out there, you make no mistake about it, we will do something, investors, you know, you poor retired people out there, we can't get your money back, but we'll take one of these people down somehow. And a year later, there they were basically setting the guy up, right? I mean, that's exactly what it was. It was a setup. It cannot be viewed in any other way, right? How do you have a situation where the guy gets to write the report, effectively appointing himself to a job that gets him $5 million in fees, right? With no court order. How does that work? I mean, that, what you have to understand, New Zealand, is that means if you own a business, the government can send somebody along, a private company, a private accounting firm, to come along, audit your books, decide that you're insolvent, give you no say in the matter, and shut you down and take all of your assets away, and they don't have to provide a court order. And not only that, the person who writes the report, the accountant, can actually get a fee, to get a commission for selling all your assets. Right? And they don't even have to justify that. You should be questioning this. So this is the situation Alan was put in, and then he was accused of fraud and put into statutory management, right? Now,
Can I say something?
They put him into stat...
I just want to say that this is something I've noticed about the New Zealand government. It is actually a criminal government run by criminals. And what they do is they prey on successful people in order to destroy them, particularly entrepreneurs. And I've seen this happen a number of times with people in New Zealand who have made their money honestly, and they simply get badly shafted by the authorities and have all their wealth confiscated off them. This happened to a man named Chris Wardle, who was doing about a $30 to $40 million real estate deal that got stolen off him, and he went again threatened by the authorities and all of that kind of thing. Alan Hubbard, of course. And Vince Seymour, who was screwed over by a guy named Michael Stiassny, who's a personal friend of the Prime Sinister. And I also met another guy just randomly one time who had nearly $1 million ship that was fully decked out with all this Hollywood memorabilia and stuff like that. I was going to use it for movies. And the cops came on and burnt the ship. Okay, so it's like in this country, if you become incredibly successful, really successful, and you start to threaten any of the big dogs, they come and they steal your stuff. Okay, it's just like the mafia.
Okay, look, what happened here, I mean, look, they put him into statutory management with his private companies, and they said that he was running a Ponzi scheme with them, right? And they said that his paperwork was, I mean, whenever I run into people about this, they always go, oh, yeah, wasn't he that old guy that was running the finance company? And, oh, didn't he kind of lose it? And there was all, it was a bit sad, really, you know. I think they were pretty hard on him. I don't think they should have treated him the way he did. But at the end of the day, he had lost it, hadn't he? You know, he'd lost all that paperwork. Here's the thing. So they said there was all this missing paperwork, and they tried to portray him as, you know, running the company. I mean, the story just kept changing. First of all, it was senility, then it was a Ponzi scheme, and then it was missing paperwork, and then he just sort of ran it in an old-fashioned way. And they just made it up as they went along, basically, and sort of people went along with the story and formed their impressions based on the headlines they were reading. None of it was true. That's the ridiculous part about it, is if you went to his offices, there was 15 computers lined up with girls doing data entry furiously all the time, right, for a start. And then 2 years down the track now, they've just announced recently that they found 70 boxes of information they didn't know they had all along. When they took all of his stuff away, when they put him into statutory management investing, they took 70 boxes of information away, and they just conveniently found them again after 2 years. So after this guy's dead and everybody thinks he's lost it and he was just running his company on handshakes and no paperwork, all of a sudden 70 boxes of paperwork turn up. The very paperwork that he could have used to defend himself against all these accusations, and on top of that, the money's there all along, and nobody's asking any questions. Nobody in the media, in the mainstream media, is going back over this and saying, "Hang on a minute, this story's done 180 degree turn compared to how it first started. Shouldn't somebody be asking questions? I mean, at the end of the day, a man and his wife have been completely denied of their rights here. Shouldn't we be looking at this?" But nobody considers it important. I think that the New Zealanders just sort of accepted that, well, it was $1.5 billion of taxpayer money, so, you know, at the end of the day, it was a lot of money. So, you know, we just really... Yes, I know it was a bit messy what they did to him, but we really shouldn't be asking any questions because it was a lot of money. And I'm saying, rubbish. You people have swallowed what you've been read in the newspapers, what you've read in the newspapers, which has all been garbage. Very, very few people out there have taken the time to study the facts of the situation, because if you did, you would find very quickly that you should not be listening to what John Key has said about this. This is what gobsmacks me. Why is it that people are not asking any questions, including the opposition parties, Labour and Greens, then the media as well, they're not asking any questions, right, about the process that was applied to Alan Hubbard. And yet everybody's busy having a go at John Key, right, for Kim.com, for Sky City,
But John Key's pants have been consistently ended up around his ankles on a whole range of issues since Alan Hubbard, right, where he's been caught flat-out lying, flat-out ignoring proper process, flat-out trashing people's rights, OK, Kim.com and other people's rights, flat-out misusing the law, flat-out abusing his power, and not one person in the media has gone back and said, stop, hang on, if he's going to do all of that, right, after Alan Hubbard, why should we believe him about what he said about Alan Hubbard? It gobsmacks me that everybody is basically, it seems to me that New Zealand is basically saying, oh, well, yeah, it was $1.5 billion, but, you know, that's okay, we can let it go. And it doesn't matter that a guy's rights were completely destroyed in the process. I mean, what is wrong with you people? You know, I'm watching all these Labour people out there going, they're tearing their hair out, trying to find a way to you know, they can't understand why they can't find a chink in John Key's armour, or you just can't see. Let me spell it out to you, right? Read my lips. Alan Hubbard is the chink in John Key's armour. Understand? If you really want to, if you really want to expose John Key for what he really is, and this government for what it really is, right? Go and demand an inquiry into. Go to your MP and demand an inquiry into South Canterbury Finance. If there was a judicial inquiry into South Canterbury Finance, John Key would be history. I'll absolutely guarantee it. He would not make the next election.
I think that also on top of that, what would be necessary is a full investigation in order to get rid of these people within parliamentary services, treasury, and so on and so forth, the ombudsman. Because what I find is interesting is that when we've got a corrupt governor like John Key or something of that nature, I reckon he's corrupt personally.
Mate, listen to
and
this.
And then you get rid of those. The only reason why they're capable of acting corrupt when they're in that position is because there are staff members who keep retained in the governmental system, regardless of which party is in power.
They are just raping the taxpayer, these people, by even turning up to work. They infuriate me. Okay, but listen to this. How long have I got to encapsulate what I'm trying to say here?
2 minutes.
Okay, listen, New Zealanders. A citizen of New Zealand had his assets seized and sold out from under him by the Crown on the basis of accusations alone made by ministers or politicians. And the media and their friends in the media. Not one court order or one warrant exists to justify any of the actions taken against this person or the sale of all of their assets. And they have convinced you that this man is guilty of fraud, and therefore you shouldn't be questioning the fact that they need to use $1.5 billion of your taxpayer money to subsidise the losses incurred by the sale of his assets to their friends at massively discounted prices. So you've been convinced this guy was a fraud, so you're just not questioning any of this process. But I'm telling you, there's no court order to warrant any of it. John Key is so exposed on this that if you understood how exposed John Key is on this issue, you would understand why Alan Hubbard is dead. Because he was due in a courtroom 3 days after he was killed to defend himself against all of these accusations, and his evidence would have nailed John Key to the mast. And that was 5 weeks before the last election, right? John Key would have been exposed in a worse situation than he's found himself with Kim.com 5 weeks before the last election, right? And Alan Hubbard died mysteriously before he could actually get his evidence into a courtroom to prove John Key and his mates wrong. Now, do the math. It's not rocket science, right? His death makes John Key luckier than a lotto winner, right? Mm. And none of you people are asking the questions. And I've come to the conclusion... No, I'm not going to make any conclusions. I don't want to attack New Zealanders, but you people need to wake up.
Stop listening to the mainstream media at the very least for a start. I mean, it's like, if your mind is toxic, I can assure you it's because toxins are being injected into your brain deliberately by the mainstream media. Switch them off. Switch on the Vinnie Eastwood show daily. Get some decent information out there from people who actually know what the heck they're talking about and do the research. We'll be right back after the break. We'll be right back after the break of the VinnieEastwoodShow.com.
Alone against your man.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, the show that's all about standing alone against your mad, deadly, worldwide, conspiratorial, computer god communism. And my very special guest is Paul Carruthers. Now, we only have a short segment here, Paul, and we've got a lot of information to get out. We need to talk about Alan Hubbard's wife and the attack on her, which was the very reason why we had the show in the first place. If you could divulge that before we go to break again, that'd be nice.
Okay. Mate, a couple of weeks ago, Alan's wife got, after 2 years after the accident that that resulted in his death, she went to court a couple of weeks ago, and effectively, it's after what appears to me to be a rather weak police investigation, in which they did find the other driver at fault. That all got thrown into question in the courtroom when all of a sudden, you know, the other driver. There's something very suspicious about this accident, and it needs to be investigated, because for it to have ended up in the mess that court case turned into a couple of weeks ago suggests to me that the police investigation was weak. Nobody's very clear on the facts. It shouldn't be that inconclusive after 2 years. Do you know what I mean? 2 years down the track, the police have had plenty of time to do their investigation thoroughly. There's a lot of question marks about this guy's conduct, the other driver. He's saying that he was driving from Dunedin to Nelson for a long weekend to visit his children. Now, that's almost 1,100 kilometre journey, 1,000 kilometre journey. Why was he towing a concrete mixer? Why was he towing a concrete mixer all the way from Dunedin to Nelson, right, to visit his children and to then tow it all the way back to Dunedin again? Doesn't make sense. Certainly added a lot of weight to his vehicle, but that's about the only reason why he would have needed it, right? Unless he intended to concrete his driveway over the long weekend that he was visiting his kids, which I doubt very much. So there's all these unanswered questions about this accident. I think it was reprehensible after what she's been put through, that Alan's widow's been put through, that she effectively got the blame by his lawyer, right? There's all I can say to the public of New Zealand is there should be a thorough investigation into this whole matter, right? And that includes, I tell you what I want to know. I want to see where this guy lives now. I want to see who owned the property beforehand, how he ended up in ownership of it, because I've been told that he lives on a farm and Bill English's electorate or somewhere around there. So his residence has shifted. I've been told that the farm used to belong to Alan Hubbard. I don't know if that's true. You know, I don't want to appear like too much of a conspiracy theorist, but these are the things I've consistently been told by other people, and I'm still trying to piece it together. There's more questions than answers about this accident, including why did it even take 2 years to go to court in the first place? And why is the outcome so inconclusive when it was a pretty clear-cut, head-on, frontal accident, okay? So this whole thing just reeks of a cover-up. It reeks of people scrambling in all sorts of directions to try to make it appear a certain way. But the problem is it's a rotting, stinking mess. The whole situation is a rotting mess, and the public should be demanding an inquiry into it. Because $1.5 billion of your money, New Zealanders, was used to subsidise the losses incurred by the sale of this man's assets to people known to the Prime Minister and up the other decision makers in this process. Those assets were sold at massively discounted prices and rates, right? And you were convinced that your money was needed to subsidise the losses, right? Because this man was a fraud. But they've never proven it. He's never had a trial. So what I'm asking you to do, New Zealanders, understand this. Are you saying, with your silence, your unwillingness to take any notice of this, are you suggesting that you're willing to take John Key's word for it, that Alan Hubbard was guilty of fraud? Because that is effectively what's happening here. If you do nothing about this, then you are effectively saying that we should all just take John Key and Bill English's word for it, that Alan Hubbard was guilty of fraud without a court order, without a trial, and that what they needed $1.5 billion of your money to subsidise the sale of the sale of his assets to people that they, it would appear, on cursory inspection, it would appear that people they knew, right? And this man never had a trial. So you've got to take John Key's word for it that he was guilty. Now, if you're willing to do that, knock yourself out. But personally, I think you're mad. I've been trying for 2.5 years to make people aware of this because I'm personally not willing to do that. I'm not willing to sit by and watch the complete devastation of this man and his wife's rights,
right? And that is first and foremost what matters to me, because he was 84 years old. If we're going to start treating our elderly people this way, especially when they put a lifetime of service into this country to the degree that they did, we're just going to trash them and turn a blind eye to everything that they did for us, for this country, for the development of this country, just because John Key says he's a fraud. We don't even need a trial to prove it, right? And we're all just going to sit here passively and let John Key rip up $1.5 billion of our money, right, selling off this guy's assets, and we don't even need a trial. There's something horribly wrong with this situation, and I'm gobsmacked that people aren't asking more questions about it, right? It's just wrong. Now, you know, I'll give you an example. South Canterbury Finance, I'll give you one example of how those assets have been stripped and given away and your money's been used to subsidise it. Braybrook Subdivision in Ashburton, right? Valued. Now, that was a South Canterbury Finance asset. That subdivision was partly completed when it was put into receivership. That subdivision was valued conservatively at between $6.5 and $8.4 million, somewhere around there, right? $6.5 million for a fire sale, $8.5 million if you just sat on the market and hope for the best, right? But the estate, the three valuations that I've seen showed that they were saying between $6.5 and $7.4 million to get rid of it quickly. Now, Alan Hubbard himself confirmed for me that that asset, the Braybrook subdivision, they owed Westpac $3.1 million on it. Okay? So it was conservatively worth $6.5 million. They owed $3.1. So in Alan Hubbard's own words, it was a good asset, right? So they could still come out with a profit if they had to fire sale. The receivers sold that to a related party for $1.8 million. $1.8 million. And your taxpayer money was used to pay Westpac out the balance of the loan. So tax, more than $1 million, $1.2, $1.3 million of taxpayer money was used to pay out Westpac for the shortfall between what was owed to them on that land and what it was sold for, right? When it was valued at three times that much, and nobody is asking any questions, right?
This is like the financial version of looting, like full on.
It is absolutely. Alan Hubbard was not put in. Alan Hubbard was subjected to statutory rape by this government. He was statutorily raped. And now you've got the situation where his two lawyers that were appointed to represent him at the beginning, one of them has been proven to be the second most influential person in New Zealand with swipe card access to Parliament, and the other one accepted the job at the end of last year as Crown solicitor. So the Crown nabbed him out of that law firm after Alan Hubbard was dead and it was all quietly went away. He was offered the job and accepted the job of Crown solicitor. So he's never going to speak against the government on Alan Hubbard's behalf now, is he? Right? He's never going to give evidence. So Alan Hubbard's defence is just shot to pieces, basically. He's never going to get any defence post-mortem, right, after his death. Because the very people who took millions of dollars to defend him and his widow against this situation basically appear to be working for the... Well, one of them is working for the government now, OK? So the trashing of these people's rights is just disturbing. I mean, the afternoon that he was put into statutory management, Alan Hubbard was punched in the head. Now, his secretary is a witness to that. She was fired. He was punched in the head by one of his colleagues. They called a special meeting that afternoon on the 20th of June at their offices, and they called Alan Hubbard and his wife in, and one of his colleagues lost his temper with Alan for being put into statutory management and embarrassing them with that situation. Alan got whacked around the back of the head. Now, Alan confirmed that for me himself, and his secretary has confirmed it for me as well. His wife can't confirm it anymore because she's suffering from acute memory loss now, right? Probably since the accident, as a result of the accident, so she can't really be reliable in that respect. But his secretary certainly can. She took them to the employment court. She was led back to her office and forced to clear her desk and told that she couldn't come back because it was now crime scene, right? And she took them to the employment court and they settled the day before it went to employment court. And she was made to sign a confidentiality clause saying that she basically. I think she told me that the wording was down-tuned to acknowledge that the guy, his hand touched Alan's head. Now, when I asked Alan about that directly, he confirmed for me that the guy punched him in the back of the head. Now, Alan wasn't prepared to press charges in that situation, but that's just one example of what this 80-plus-year-old man had to go through as a result. All of this was because it was about money, right? And all I'm saying is to the guy that hit him, you disgust me. You are scum. If you ever see this, you are scum. He was 84 years old. What, 83 years old? What planet do you live on? How can you justify it? How is money that important to you that it would justify hitting this man? Right? And New Zealanders, is money so, are we so obsessed with money that we're completely prepared to turn a blind eye to the absolute devastation of these people's rights, okay? Because it was about money. Because John Key said that it was about $1.5 billion, so that the ends justify the means. I'm saying they don't. New Zealand, you got it wrong. Ask the questions. Demand an inquiry.
Mm.
This is a travesty of justice.
You know, justice is a hard thing to find, and in my opinion, it's an artificial thing that humans have created in order to make themselves feel better about it. And I don't know about you, Paul. In fact, I do know about you, Paul, but I feel very, very bad. Like, in my guts, it feels like it's eating away at me to know that this injustice continues. And it would have to be an absolute part of effort on all of our parts in this entire country in order to try and expose this and try and get some justice to maintain some form of equilibrium in this country. We've only got about 10 seconds, Paul, so unfortunately we're going to have to leave it there and bring you on again sometime soon. Paul Carruthers, ladies and gentlemen, we'll be right back after the break. Welcome back.
Everyone's asleep.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to hour number two of the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live from New Zealand. And also, just a reminder to people, I do work very, very, very hard at this show. You know, I'm doing the videos, I'm doing the audio archives, I'm writing out the little blog postings, I'm running the website, I'm running the YouTube channel. I'm trying as hard as I freaking can in order to get some decent information and entertainment out there. And there is virtually little compensation for that, except for those people who appreciate the show enough to give something back. I would really appreciate it, particularly at this point in time. My car is broken down, engine's overheating, the missus has run out of fuel miles on her car, so she can't drive it legally, kind of thing. So this is the unfortunate plea for donations. Please, ladies and gentlemen, please help me. I can't actually go out to public meetings to film them and get them up online for people to see now because my car doesn't work. I'm in quite desperate scenario right now. I don't know how many hundreds of dollars it's going to cost, but it's probably a lot. So I desperately, and underline that word desperately, need your support right at this very particular moment. Now, onto the show. We have the amazing Bob Tuskin. Welcome to the show. And
I don't know how
by the way, he's just recently bought an NFL team, and he's going to be renaming them the Tuskin Raiders. Welcome
the
to the show.
Raiders. I like that. That's Tuskin, Vinny.
Yeah.
And by the way, I have no shirt on, which I didn't plan because I didn't think I'd be showing my beautiful face here on camera. But this is a great opportunity for me to remind folks out there that they should go outside for at least 15 minutes a day at about 1, 2 o'clock in the afternoon. And you could have some pants on if you like, or you can have some underwear or a bikini on for the ladies. And soak up some vitamin D. Get that vitamin D all in your system. Don't be afraid of the sun. It's summertime. It's a great opportunity for us to mention this. Now, sunscreen, on the other hand, is poison, absolute poison. I've interviewed Dr. Elizabeth Plord on the topic, and what happens is, Vinny, you're putting these nano-sized particles on your skin, and you think you're protecting yourself from the sun. But in all actuality, even though you're so-called being protected by the sunscreen, you're allowing for the harmful rays to still get into your skin and blocking out the beneficial rays that build pigment in your skin, which are there to protect yourself from the various cancers that you can get from the radioactive waves that come from the sun. So sunscreen is absolute poison. The best thing you can do is just limit your time in the sun, but at the same time, don't be afraid of the sun. Don't be a vampire. Soak up those rays and get that vitamin D.
Mm. And this also goes for Fukushima residents. Go outside and soak up some rays.
Yes, and you definitely got to be careful because you might grow another head or another limb, but that's all part of the process.
Yeah, exactly. Vitamin D does strange and wonderful things to the body.
Especially near Fukushima.
Yeah, especially vitamin cesium-130.
Yes, and don't forget, you want to be sure to take the strontium and the plutonium. And if you can get it in a concentrated enough form, make sure to make a nice little line like you would cocaine or something like that and snort away. Because, I mean, these folks, these things that have been released into our environment have a half-life of thousands of years. All you need is the tiniest of particles to get into your system, and it will kill you. All we need is the tiniest of particles to be released on the planet Earth, and it will kill us all. We're all going to die. Here's a great opportunity for some fear porn, Vinny, which I know. And I'm wearing no shirt, so another great opportunity for some fear porn here. Yeah. Which, if it's the brighter side of genocide on the Vincent Eastwood show, ladies and gentlemen, at least one episode of fear porn a day, and the rest is history, or his story, depending on how you look at it.
Indeed, indeed. And Bob, I was just wondering what you've actually been up to, other than getting your 15 minutes of sunshine a day with your show and all your other activism and such.
Well, I like you do a show 5 days a week. And interview all sorts of guests and have a plethora of topics that I'm kind of a somewhat, you know, informed participant on. But I'm learning. I use my show as a learning process, and I'm venting most of the time. I'm just pissed off, and I need a place to be pissed off at. I mean, people look at our shows, dude, and they're like, you know, oh, this is a radio show. No, it's just a couple guys who woke up, whatever the hell that means, and are pissed off and get to talk to interesting people as an excuse on the airwaves.
I think you've just actually encapsulated how I view my radio show. It really is just an excuse to interview interesting people and learn stuff.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And that's all it is. There's no agenda. You know, I still get the comments, Bob, where do you get your funding? Like you, I'm lucky if I get a couple dollars, if anything. In fact, I haven't made a dime in months. You know, if I was doing this for the money, I definitely would have chosen a different career ages ago. Yeah.
What was your last paycheck before becoming an activist?
Well, I've always had odd jobs, so I've had to do both. You know, I've had to go to school, be an activist, work a job, wash dishes, be an activist. And still to this day, I work a regular job. I'm a stay-at-home dad. You know, that's my main job. And you want to talk about not getting a paycheck for doing a tremendous amount of work. Wait until you have kids, or if you already have kids, you know what I'm talking about. I mean, and that's a great example, though. And it's a great parallel to being an activist. You don't need Federal Reserve notes or whatever central bank you have, currencies, to have to be a custodian of your child. You don't need any of that stuff as a motivator. The motivation is there regardless. You want to put food on the table regardless, non-genetically modified food, non-poison essentially. You want to make sure that they don't fall off a cliff regardless. We don't need the private bankers to dangle the carrots of debt in front of our faces in order for us to have the motivation to wipe my kid's diaper. I don't get paid for that, believe me. We go through diapers all day long here. Don't make a single dime. So the bottom line is, you know, our system of slavery has convinced us that we are only here for the sake of making money. And in a sense, we need that money because we live in this world and it's important. But in another sense, the resources are there And the motivation is there for us to just live our lives. Mm. But what happens is they want to divide it up into this debt-based, you know, existence and whatnot, and get us away from just functioning like normal human beings. The greatest example of this is a test that Pavlov did with chickens. He provided, and everybody knows about the Pavlovian dog, right? He rang the bell and the dog, you know, salivated and whatnot.
Oh, yeah, well, I remember that. In New Zealand, Pavlova is a dessert.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, yeah. It actually is pretty freaking nice, actually.
Do they put high fructose corn syrup?
What hasn't got high fructose corn syrup no. these days? I think it's homemade? A pretty short list. Yeah, oh, okay. Yeah. Well, you can't make it home way. It's made like with a lot of egg whites and sugar, basically.
Oh, so it's one of those factory with high fructose corn syrup stuff, huh?
Yeah.
Poison. Anyways, I digress. So Pavlov did a test with chickens. Everybody knows about the dogs, but he also did one with chickens. And he provided the chickens with an abundance of food and water, the basics, right? And whenever they were hungry, hopefully this was non-genetically modified food. Anyways, I digress. Whenever they were hungry, they'd go to the feeder, and there would always be the water or food there for them, whenever they wanted. They were hungry, they'd go, it's there, no problem. And he observed their behaviors under these conditions of constant abundance. Well, he then changed those conditions. He then removed food for a while and added food and took away the food. In other words, introducing various degrees of scarcity and then abundance and then scarcity. And this crazy world that we live in, this social Darwinism was created. The pecking order was created with these chickens, okay? So only then, once he was altering this state in which the chickens were able to access their food, only then did all these behaviors start to develop. Only then did they start to hoard. Only then did they start to steal from one another, start to attack one another. He could even get them to kill each other if the conditions were tweaked just enough. And that's what the puppet masters, the powers that shouldn't be, are essentially doing by manufacturing scarcity, manufacturing our markets and our world today and our wars today to fulfill their benefits and to slowly, incrementally get rid of much of the useless eaters.
Now, can I also make a point here? I put on Facebook yesterday, Bob, and I think you'll appreciate this. I laugh when people who are allegedly awake spend all their time sitting down at their computers telling everybody else to get off their ass and wake up.
That's right.
Right. And I had this one comment that really enraged me. I'll read it out here. You said it yourself, Vinny. You just interview people. That's your job. Stroke your ego much? Again, I ask, where is your sweat going into? Where's your food, energy, systems you've constructed, or at least in the process of constructing? How are you yourself going to convince and demonstrate an economic model that satisfies all peoples of nations' interests without inciting the opposite? So basically, I'm one guy who's a radio interviewer, right? And I'm a bad person because I'm not solving all the world's problems by myself. And he says, go protest some more and make yourself feel like you're doing something. The irony is you are just the same behind a keyboard / microphone, interviewing people, pointing fingers. Sure, there's truth on both sides of your post. There is only one truth. There is only one solution. Do you have it? Now, that's one comment that I wanted to read out. The other one here is by another person. I've tried to fight the lies. That is a pointless effort. I don't want to be bothered trying to wake everybody up. So this is the two things that happen to people in this movement that are really, really negative. One, you tell everybody else, well, basically you're not doing anything, you're scum or whatever because you're not solving the whole world's problems. Two, you get disillusioned with the fact that not everybody believes everything you say and wakes up instantly the second you mention something scary.
Yeah, I mean, and we see that attitude for so many. And it's part of the reason why collectively, well, there is no collective. That's the point.
Yeah.
It's no longer a movement. It's a bowel movement, really. And that's as simple as that. And as far as the first comment's concerned, you know, I've had that same comment in my mind internally. You know, I said to myself, Bob, what are you really doing? Or what are you really accomplishing as a journalist, if you will? And it's, you know, I guess I'm not a journalist, but whatever I am or am not. And I've questioned that. And in the process, I've kind of tweaked my show here and there a little bit. I've tried to focus more on solution-oriented stuff, whatever that is or isn't. I do feel at times we're just preaching to the choir, and that's very frustrating because we don't want to do this to just sit here and have, oh, I almost used a crude reference of a circle. I'll skip that one. But you get my point. We don't want to sit here and preach to the choir all day long. Let's use that analogy instead. And so it's frustrating, and I can see the point, and I can see the urge to want to go on beyond just doing a show and presenting information and actually getting your hands dirty, so to speak. But not all of us are able to do that, and we all have our various parts to this overall big picture here that we take place in.
I look at it kind of like you say, you know, how you've got medical people on the battlefield, you know, you've right. got medics and you've got soldiers, right? I consider the truth movement media people as sort of like the medics, like we're the people that that patch up or the cooks in the background and, you know, that kind of thing, without which the soldiers would just be wounded and die, you know, there'd be no backline to support them going out and doing their work. And so what our role is merely to support the front line, not necessarily be at the front line ourselves, but to actually do for the front line what they cannot do for themselves because they're too busy fighting the enemy directly. We're the ones that are giving them ammunition by giving them coverage. We're the ones that are helping them out heal when they feel broken, when they feel sad, or when they feel down. You know, I can't tell you how many times, Bob, I've had really what I consider to be incredibly together activists who have called me up practically in tears and me having spent maybe 4 or 5 hours on the phone with them just trying to cheer them up because what they're going through is so damn hard.
There's a lot of burnout, you know. We see a lot of people just absolutely, crush or... what's the word I'm looking for? They just can't take the pressure of it all. And I've been doing this for so many years now that I've become comfortably numb, to steal a title of a Pink Floyd song, to it all, which is scary in its own right because, you know, I wonder sometime if I'm becoming too complacent with this, if I should be in more of a go out and get 'em mode. But to go back to what we originally stated or about our shows, you know, they're a learning process, they're a place to vent, and we don't consider the shows to be the end all. That's not the point of them. If we want to do that, we'll do our other forms of activism. You know, this makes up a small percentage in all actuality of what I do. I go out and I confront people, same. Which, you know, I don't know how much confronting people, that's a whole different argument. I don't know how much of that does, but I do it. I call into local radio shows on a regular basis. I call into nationally syndicated talk radio shows that are beyond our ideals and our thoughts, and I give them hell on a regular basis. I grow a garden here locally. I've tried to support our sheriff here locally, who is a constitutional sheriff along the same lines of Richard Mack. I've met with people here that I like and that I love that are also interested in these things. I've helped people with their health. When I do shows on health, I find that to be incredibly rewarding. And if you want to talk about some topics, Vinny, that I've been very much heavily involved with lately on both the personal level and on the show, we can talk about health issues. So here's a perfect example, the shows that I've done on cancer, the shows that I've done on AIDS, of how our shows are not just simply for the sake of putting words out on the internet that serve no purpose, that are just talking about the Rothschilds 15 million different ways to Sunday. Here's a perfect example. What I'm doing is I'm talking about cancer, okay? I'm telling you about the poisons, and I'm curing people in my life and in your life that need the help. What a great example of how we go beyond this paradigm.
Indeed. And we'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen, with Bob Tuscan from the Star Wars Tuscan Raiders back in a minute.
On December 16th, 1961, the world turned upside down, then inside out, and I was born screaming in America. It was the tail end of the American dream. Just before we lost our innocence irrevocably, when the TV eye brought the horror of our lives into our homes for all to see. I was told when I grew up I could be anything I wanted. A fireman, a policeman, a doctor, even president it seemed. And for the first time in the history of mankind, something new called an astronaut. But like many kids growing up on a steady diet of Westerns, I always wanted to be the cowboy hero. That lone voice in the wilderness, fighting corruption and evil wherever I found it, and standing for freedom, truth, and justice. And in my heart of hearts, I still track the remnants of that dream wherever I go in my never-ending ride into the setting sun.
Welcome back. All right, welcome, everybody. You listen to the Vinnie Eastwood Show on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. I wanted to also read out some of my... some of my replies to these Facebook people. One of them says, I haven't noticed any change. We seem worse off than before. I don't see any progress towards freedom or people in control. I see people asking for more government intervention and more lies, and anyone who is quote-unquote awake is not willing to go towards any sort of solutions. Maybe I'm missing it. Correct me if I'm wrong. But what good is it to be awake? We are doing as much, if not less, than not awake people. And I said, look at it this way. If you convince yourself that doing anything is a waste of time, you've just made yourself useless, which is exactly what the elite want. Don't get depressed about it. Try to have fun and play with the idea of getting exterminated through the levity. You can find some energy and motivation. And, you know, we all go through these phases where you get, you know, jaded. Jaded. I love that word because, oh, my goodness, there is a lot of jadedness going around the truth movement. Bob, what say you?
Well, I think that's exactly right. We've become perpetual curmudgeons, and it's unfortunate. Whoa,
what is that word? I've never heard that word before.
Curmudgeon. Yeah, it's a grumpy... typically elderly, but in this case, just grumpy individual.
Like bludgeoning somebody with chrome.
Curmudgeon, yeah. And, you know, it's funny because that sort of sentiment we're not doing anything, so therefore let's just not do anything, is exactly what feeds into the powers that shouldn't be in their agenda, like you said. I mean, if you don't do anything, think about it. Then nothing's going to be done. But if you at least try to do something, and if it doesn't work, try something else, tweak it a bit. That's all we can do per se. And if you come up with a better idea, that's besides, you know, obviously doing nothing is not a better idea. Then I'd love to hear it because we definitely need to have this dialogue, and we do need to be self-critical. You know, I don't think this conversation itself is the problem. I think some of the conclusions that people make is the problem, and that this is a healthy thing, you know, because if we are to do the same thing over and over and over again and expect different results, even though we're getting the same thing over and over and over again, that's essentially, as many have said, the definition of insanity. And I might be insane, but I sure as hell will not be insane in that regard. So I might be crazy, I should say, but I'm sure as hell not insane. And if I don't see it working, I do think we should tweak things and try something new. But not doing anything, now that is just going to feed in more than anything else.
Yeah, I mean, and to anybody who says that all I do is sit here in the studio and that's the only thing that I do is just nuts. Like seriously, like they haven't done any research at all. Okay, I'm in the streets protesting. I'm at public meetings filming on the radio, broadcasting the truth basically every single day. And this person goes out and says, there's only one truth, there's only one solution. And he accuses me of having a big ego.
The final solution.
Yeah, I mean, what are you going to do,
Nazi.
Yeah, totally, bro.
No, I'm not saying that he is, but...
I don't think he is either. Anyway, in terms of food independence, which he questioned me on, he said, we're growing a garden in the backyard and we've just started being able to get food out of it. It takes a while to get a garden established and get your foods out of it. And now we've got about maybe 10% of our food being grown there, and we just planted a whole bunch of stuff yesterday. And in terms of economic independence, which is another point that he raised, well, basically I'm doing volunteer work, right? Now people appreciate it. And donate. Hence, I've been able to work without an employer and not have to spend anything on travel costs to get to and from my slave job, or waste any time doing that. So I can spend every available minute exposing scumbaggery. Now, I'm not an economist. I mean, so I don't know what economic model necessarily is going to work. And as far as I know, no established economist knows how an economy is supposed to work either. And if they do, they've yet to implement an economic model that works.
Right.
And you know, I've basically taken a big thing on my shoulder here. Like, I'm compensating for the entire media apparatus in New Zealand's lack of relevant information or real news, like, by myself, okay? You know, if you name me one person in this country who's built a website, TV and radio show by themselves and managed to stay afloat for more than half a decade, please show them to me. They don't exist. I'm just trying to...
House. No, he's from Australia.
See? You know? That's a real
David
problem.
David Icke. Oh, wait, he's from England. Oh, sorry.
Yeah, I mean, there's many people out there who've done it, but in terms of New Zealand, and this is where, you know, my focus and specificity comes in here, there really ain't anybody else doing it. Which is incidentally the reason why I try to give so many New Zealanders on the show, because otherwise they wouldn't really get into the international stage or the media, because there's so many things that happen in this country that are an incredible microcosm to look at for the rest of the world. I mean, I don't think you were listening to the first hour, Bob, but we were talking about how corrupt our government is, that they can literally just steal a billionaire's assets with no court, no warrants, no nothing, and have the entire media just demonize the guy, and then they get away with it. And everybody involved becomes
a bit of it. I listened to a bit of it before I had to go on another show. And it's, you know, I mean, it's of no surprise, I'm sure. This, we're not saying anything new. New Zealand's not the only one. The United States is not the only one. This is corruption that happens all over the world. They don't call it the New World Order for nothing, even though I think that is probably not the greatest of terms to describe the agenda, but bottom line is there's corruption everywhere you look, in all countries and all size and all forms, and that we need to expose it, and we need to be hyper-local and at the same time also broadcast to the rest of the planet. Because of the internet these days, we have a unique ability to do what we've never been able to do before. And I think that that is a great luxury, and that we need to make as much use of it as possible. And that's essentially what we're doing right now on the air, broadcasting from Florida to New Zealand, from New Zealand to Austin, Texas, and so on and so forth. And it's a great luxury that we have. Now, on the other end of the spectrum, to look at some of the cons, the internet is like a vacuum in many respects. It sucks up all the junk, and there's all that fluff, just like television. You know, there's programming on your computers, you know, the old AOL model, that pyramid with the eye in it, where you'd go to their screen and you'd be stuck within their paradigm, if you will. And thank goodness we're beyond that, because that was keeping people in a box or pyramid, whichever one you prefer. They prefer the pyramid, by the way. But, you know, the bottom line is, so back to the internet being a vacuum, you know, it sucks up all this junk and all this fluff, and it's very hard to find these good bits of information, shows like Vinnie Eastwood and Bob Tuskin and others. And the powers that shouldn't be have accounted for this. And that's why they've allowed for it to go on for as long as they have, without pulling out the internet kill switch and coming down on us. Now, of course, they've tried to bring things like SOPA and PIPA and and all these other things to slowly crack down. And of course,
speaking of which, do you know what you call a company that's sympathetic towards SOPA?
Sympathetic to SOPA. Oh, here we go. Get ready. Get ready for the sound effect, Mr. Producer. You ready for the drum roll or the whatever that's called?
Snare drum. It's called. So pathetic.
So only on the Vincent Eastwood show, ladies and gentlemen. There you go. Where's the sound effect?
It's not
slow. Slow. Oh, there we go.
I don't have a board op on you.
Come on. All right.
But you're right, actually, Bob. They really have started to. They've come up with all these plans to censor the web, but they haven't implemented them because there's just as much disinfo on the web as there is in.
Yeah, they don't care. I mean, do they really care? I don't think they do. I think they kind of get off on the fact that there's a website dedicated to exposing them. Look at this guy, this Schmendrick. You know, look at him.
What does the word Schmendrick mean?
Vinny, do we speak the same language, or do you guys speak English, Darren?
See, a Schmendrick it's kind of a
Yiddish word, by the way. It's a Yiddish word.
Oh, okay. Sounds some kind of like a smitten mandrake.
And now it's going to be a Jewish conspiracy because I used the Yiddish word. So this is just proof that Bob Tuscan is a crypto Jew. Actually, I'm not so much of a crypto Jew, and that the Jews run the world, and it's only the Jews, always the Jews, forever the Jews, and nothing but the Jews. Your mic's muted. Try it again.
Never mind. I was going to make some kind of a joke about children in schools having juice boxes forced onto them, you know, in order to keep them.
Oh, the juice boxes! Yes, that's a big juice conspiracy.
Yeah. Everything's a Jewish conspiracy, don't you know? Every time a water main blows in Mecca or something like that, Saudi Arabian officials come out and they blame Israel as a Jewish conspiracy, as opposed to their own incompetence with their inability to maintain their own infrastructure.
Well, I mean, it's important. You know, this is a topic that we've strangely gone on here for a second that I talk a lot about because I happen to come from a Jewish family, whatever that means or doesn't mean. I also come from a family of human beings, believe it or not. I know that's very strange, right? So, I happen to come from that background, and they're real secular, and they don't really – they go to temple when it's fashionable maybe, and they go to the deli and have a cup of matzo ball soup, and they're Jewish, right? They're not, however, involved with this cabal, involved with the Rothschild central bankers, and are involved in the criminal state of Israel, killing Palestinians, dropping white phosphorus gas on them.
No more than somebody who has a Catholic family is obviously linked up to Jesuit assassins or something.
Exactly right. And, you know, I've tried to make this point, but there is an element amongst us that is hell-bent on the fact that it's the Jews, and they can't distinguish names from groups. You know, I can sit here and all day long tell you about the criminal family known as the Red Shields, the Rothschilds. And we can make a great point that they are so-called Ashkenazi Jews that are not real Jews. They're not the true Semitic people, but it's a whole different story. And that has nothing to do with the guy at the deli down the street who makes a mighty fine bagel with lox on it. And I've used all these horribly stereotypical examples here, but you get my point. There's everyday people that are everyday people.
Yeah. I mean, my former producer, Mitch Santelli, is Jewish.
Santelli was your former producer.
Mitch Santel.
Mitch Santel. I thought you said Pete Santelli. I'm sorry.
No, please don't mention that name on the show ever again. And the editor of this magazine here, Uncensored Magazine, my good friend Jonathan Eisen, he's Jewish. Another friend of mine, Gilad Amir, who promotes dance parties and stuff like that, he's Jewish. I'm friends with all of these guys. They're not involved in no conspiracy, bro. They're actually working against the system, not with
it. Ladies and gentlemen, I hope you take this clip and you spread it wide and far. Vinny Eastwood is secretly, or not so secretly anymore, working for the Jews. He is a shill. He has just admitted it, and this is YouTube gold. This is a great clip for everybody to to spread, and I hope they do so. Vinny, you've been exposed, brother.
Yeah, see, now that's three of my friends out of hundreds that happened to be, that just so happened to be Jewish.
I don't want
to
hear
therefore
it.
I work for them.
I come from a Jewish family, even though I don't practice the religion at all, even though I can't stand what Israel is doing, what the Zionist lobbyists are doing. But I'm on your show right now. You're having me on. That's grounds for, some sort of shady business here. I mean, I could be funding you. I could be paying you money for this interview, and this could possibly be nothing more than one of those Jewish propaganda pieces.
Yeah, and that's the interesting thing as well. It doesn't matter how you mention it or how you spin it or what the facts are. It's all a Jewish conspiracy, right?
It is. And here's the funny thing about that. The certain lobbyist, APAC, Abe Foxman, and others that are pushing the true criminal agenda in the name of Judaism or Israel or whatever they want to use as their proxy, they are very much feeding off of these trolls or these individuals out there that want to just say it's all the Jews, it's the Jews, 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 and they get this Jewish tunnel vision, which I'm not sure what that would look like. They own these guys. They are fond of these people, and they like them. It's a perfect Jewish agent provocateur.
Totally. And we'll be right back after the break. Ladies and gentlemen, don't you go anywhere.
Boy, they, Vincent, be nice.
Special guest is Bob Tuskin. He was originally in a Star Wars movie as one of the Tuskin Raiders, and now he's become a famous radio show host.
All right. Anyway,
can you do the rest of the show, please? Yeah, back into the Vincent Eastwood character, please.
Yeah. Well, see, I'm actually wearing my hat from my dad's company, and God rest his soul, Eastwood Forklift Tires. Yeah. He designed like 400 different types of tires himself. He was the guy who invented the ability to bond metal to rubber, and he managed to solve traction problems and freezing works. You know, that was my dad.
Have left behind a huge estate.
Yeah, he did, and it's all locked away in a trust, so I can't benefit from any of it.
Oh no, it's a Jewish conspiracy. Dude.
Hey, I could have, if they had split it up equitably amongst the kids and what have you, we'd all have our own homes paid off. Like, basically, that'd be about as much just for us kids in the estate. But it's locked down to the point where if anybody gets anything, that means everybody has to get everything, and you have to get everybody in the entire trust to agree, which basically, for all intents and purposes, means nobody gets anything ever. And so I'm going to have to do whatever I can in order to just survive at this point. it's unfortunate. But, such is life. You don't get everything you think you think you need. And you just got to survive otherwise. Now, infighting in the truth movement, and this is something that is a very interesting topic, and I don't want to mention any names here, and I don't want to go into it. I just want to talk about the subject of infighting, just in general.
Do we have to?
Maybe we could change the subject. Have you got something you'd rather talk about, Bob?
I don't know. There's a million other topics I'd rather talk about, to be honest. And I don't mean to be a party pooper here, because it is definitely a topic that is prevalent. But I've tried to resist it at all possible angles. Mm-hmm. And not because I'm concerned about, I don't know. I think there's more important topics that I focus on that I think we should get into while we have some remaining time here on the show. And the main one is the HIV issue for me. And I made the point a couple breaks ago that, you know, we were talking about what it is we do that actually makes a difference. And I said that when we talk about health, somebody out there listening, hopefully, will actually be able to incorporate the information provided and protect themselves and save themselves from the pharmaceutical industrial complex's cocktails that they want to poison you with, and so on and so forth. So for me, the two big topics lately have been cancer and AIDS. AIDS being something that I've been involved with for some time now. And there's a lot of disinformation about the HIV topic out there that I'd like to address just briefly, and I hope people look into it further when they get some time and go beyond just the surface level info I'll be able to get into. There's two schools of thoughts amongst the alternative media, whatever that is or isn't. There's the idea that HIV is a virus that was manufactured in a laboratory, put into vaccines, and spread amongst us to slowly kill us. Okay. I have no doubt that there's nasty stuff in vaccines. I have no doubt that there are that there is an agenda, rather, to slowly kill us. All right. But here's my problem with that. And here's why I subscribe to the other idea, which is, rather than AIDS being developed in a laboratory, AIDS was developed in a boardroom. The idea that this virus, which they've never actually isolated, known as HIV, which they don't actually test for when you receive a so-called HIV test, is the cause of this immune system breakdown, is heavily naive, especially when you couple that with the fact that people who are supposedly dying of AIDS are tested for their antibodies. And these antibodies are naturally elevated when the body's fighting off illness, okay? So you can be pregnant, and as a pregnant lady, your body's antibodies are naturally elevated because you're protecting the baby and you're protecting the process of pregnancy. You could have underlying illnesses like malaria and so on and so forth that could increase your antibody level. This isn't HIV. This is high levels of antibodies, but you're told that you have HIV if you reach a certain criteria and you meet a certain risk group. In other words, if you're gay, you're black, you've been to Africa, all these questions that you'll hear when they give you the test, the so-called test. And then they tell you that, okay, you're HIV positive, supposedly, even though we've never isolated it, even though we're basing this on just the fact that your antibodies are elevated and you're going to die. And you need to protect yourself for as long as you're able to live with a drug called AZT. What is AZT?
Bob, before you continue, this sounds remarkably similar to how they diagnose children with ADHD and ADD with no testing to actually verify it really of any scientific nature, and then they drug them for the rest of their life.
That's a good example that I've never thought of. And there's no test. They say that there's different levels in your brain, but they've never been able to test your actual brain chemistry. They just kind of come up with this arbitrary definition of ADD. And even there was that story going around, the so-called founder of ADD had admitted on his deathbed, I think, that sure enough, it's a made-up thing. Just as made up as the Jewish people, perhaps. Okay, bad joke. But the point remains that HIV works in a similar fashion. So they take these people, they create this boogeyman of a virus that's put you in fear. They say, you're going to die. You're going to die because you have this illness. And then they put you on AZT. What is AZT? Well, AZT is a reject chemotherapy drug. They originally used it as a chemotherapy.
I thought AZT was a West Coast rapper.
Well, that's a different AZT, Vinny. Okay.
Oh, wait, maybe that was Eazy-E.
Eazy-E. He died of AIDS, didn't he?
Incidentally.
Maybe. Is that
Eazy-E died of AIDS because he didn't take his AZT?
No, because he did take his AZT. And what is AZT? It's a reject chemotherapy drug. They wouldn't even give it to cancer patients anymore. And we all know chemotherapy is poison. And it's a DNA destroyer. And what they do is they take somebody who's already sick, who already has their antibodies elevated, and they poison them with this medication that for the rest of their lives on a daily basis, that's going to further kill them and make their health decline. This is what AIDS is. This is what the HIV virus is. And in Africa, it works in a similar fashion. In Africa, they don't even test the people. They have something what's known as the Bengui definition of AIDS. And that is, if you have certain amount of symptoms, if you're losing weight rapidly, if you're sneezing, if you're coughing, if you have enough of these symptoms, you're then considered to be HIV positive with no test at all. And you're told you're going to die, and you have to make the choice as to whether or not you want to eat food because you're very poor, and AIDS has become a brand name for poverty in Africa, or you'll take your medicine. So people are deciding, okay, I eat some food here, or I have some of my AIDS medicine, and they can't decide. And then, of course, they don't have access to clean water. Most of these people are dying because of malnutrition, but no, Bono, Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, and your also great eugenics plan, it is AIDS. Thank you for saving them with vaccines and medication, because that's exactly what they need. More vaccines, more medication, even though they can't get a gosh darn clean glass of water. Are you kidding me? I mean, this stuff infuriates me, Vinny, and it's something that I've spent a lot of time on. I think it's a very important topic. And without getting too much more ahead of myself, I want to give out some quick resources for people to check out to learn more. One is House of Numbers. It's a great documentary that interviews many of the people who are involved with this field, even those that are involved with the lies, which is very important to hear it out of their own mouths, exposing themselves. It's called House of Numbers. You can find it on Netflix. You can find it on YouTube in a full-length version and so on and so forth. The other is made by a friend of mine, and it's called HIV Equals AIDS, Fact or Fraud. Okay, HIV Equals AIDS, Fact or Fraud, and that one you can find at the website AIDSfraudvideo.com. There's a group in New Zealand that looks at this. Rethinking AIDS has a group in New Zealand. There's a group in Perth, Australia, that looks at this, known as the Perth Group. And there's plenty of resources out there. Vinny?
I was hoping, just before we go to break, that you could plug your website and your show, Bob, so that people can go and listen to it.
If they want to listen to it after all this today, geez, they're probably going to swear me off. They said, geez, this guy was awful on the Vinny Eastwood show. Why would I want to listen to his show? So, yeah, I do a show, whatever. It's 5 days a week, bobtuscan.com. BobTuscan.com. It's at 10 o'clock East Coast time. That's 10 p.m. Eastern time. And I'm on Monday through Friday. Have an archive section, and I hope people check it out. One quick thing before I go, because I know we're coming up to the final moments here. There's a little girl named Lindsay Nagel. She was adopted from Romania. She was told she had AIDS. At 1 year old, they put her on the AZT. Her health started to rapidly decline. She realized that she was getting sick from the medication. They took her off. She's now 20-plus years old. All the other kids in her portion of the AIDS hospital, all dead. She's alive, living a healthy lifestyle. This is one of the biggest frauds of our lifetimes, folks, and we need to expose it. Vinny, thanks for having me on, brother.
Thank you very much for aiding me on this particular broadcast and filling it up with some good information, Bob. Thank you very much for your time. All right, and ladies and gentlemen, bear in mind, and I recommend that you go to thevinnyeastwoodshow.com. Please subscribe for a couple of dollars a month so that we can keep everything running here. Bear in mind, of course, that my car is kind of broken down, overheating, and it's going to cost several hundred dollars to fix. So if you could donate, that would be very nice, because that way I can keep going to protests, keep going to public meetings, and putting them online for people around the world to see, which otherwise they generally wouldn't. Thank you very much for your time, ladies and gentlemen, and we'll see you again another time.